Good afternoon. I'm Dave Daigle, the Deputy for Media Relations at CDC. Today, Dr. Ann Schuchat, the Director of the National Immunization, Respiratory, and Disease Center, will brief us or actually provide an update on the ongoing outbreak.
Well, it's nice to see all of you on a Saturday, joining us here today for the daily update. You know, I think people have been, in the media, we've been hearing a little bit about we're out of the woods, it looks like this is ending. And I want to say that while reports from Mexico are appear to be encouraging and some are cautiously optimistic, we can't afford to let down our vigilance. We have information that this novel virus continues to spread with increasing cases and increased states affected. And we are acting, as President Obama said this morning, actively and aggressively. Our highest priority is the health and safety of the American population, and we really want to make sure that we're staying ahead of things. Today's case count, 160 confirmed U.S. cases. They occur in 21 states. The individual state case counts are on our website every day at 11 in the morning. You can check for the details there. Median age of cases remains fairly young at 17 years of age with a range of 1 to 81. The majority of the cases are younger than 20. The most recent known onset is April 28th, so cases are continuing and the counts continue to go up. As we've all been saying, we're focusing a lot less on the individual numbers and on the pattern. And what we see is continued illness in contacts of people who've been ill, some clusters in schools that you've heard about. We continue to ask the question about how severe this particular strain of H1N1 influenza virus is and will evolve to be here in the U.S. Those are important questions that we continue to look at. The response continues with the focus on making sure people who are sick stay home, that people don't fly or use public transit when they are ill, but that it's totally fine to be out and about when you aren't ill with respiratory symptoms. We're thrilled people are washing their hands more, and we don't want them to lose their vigilance about that because that continues to be important. As we've said, we've been deploying our strategic national stockpile to the state and project areas, and we've got delivery in 30 of those states and the vast majority of the population is affected. And by the end of tomorrow, we will have completed the deployment of the SNS asset. Because of the day, I want to keep my remarks fairly short and just focus on questions. I think, as you know, we've been thanking a lot of people over the days behind us. We've been thanking the media for your help in getting the story out, thanking the incredible public health workers who are at the front lines helping respond to this challenge, thanking the CDC workforce for the night and days that they're putting in. So today we would like, on behalf of the CDC workforce, to thank the families of the CDC workforce, who are really keeping their spirits up while we are here. So with that, I'd like to answer questions that you have. Okay. It was supposed to start over here.
Yeah. Hi, CC Connolly from the Washington Post. I know that you've spoken in recent days about how there'll be local decisions with respect to things like school closing. But along those same lines, do you have guidance for, say, businesses, government offices that may have cases? And is there any reason, I noticed schools are now talking about closing for 14 days. Mm-hmm. Is there thinking that children carry the virus longer? That seems like a long period of time.
Yeah, thank you. The guidance, we have been updating our guidance regularly, and in addition to guidance for schools, we're trying to make sure there's information for other circumstances. The situation with the business community or other workplaces is one that we're attuned to. We've been actually doing outreach calls to the business sector. I think we had several hundred business organizations on a call the other day, reaching out to them about the questions their members had and how we could better reach their constituencies. We think the basics apply to those circumstances, keeping staying home when you're ill with respiratory symptoms, and I think even the president calls for permissive leave policies to help us manage this particular concern. The school guidance that was updated to suggest a 14-day period, that was reflecting the information about the duration that a child might be continue to be infectious. The shedding of influenza viruses is longer in young children than it is in adults. Now, the information for high school-age children may not be that complete, but with an abundance of caution, the idea was 14 days might be more prudent. I want to say that all of our guidance, particularly that for schools, school dismissals, we really want to respect the local jurisdictions, the local authorities who understand the circumstances on the ground and the challenges of these interventions. Our goal is for interventions to be evidence-based and to be no more harmful than the virus. We want to make sure that we are having a net benefit. And so issues such as the school dismissals are ones that we're actively reevaluating as we get more information about. Okay. Yeah, Mike?
Morning, Dr. Mike Stogie from the AP. 2 days ago, when Dr. Besser was up here, he said there might be some more information on a couple topics. One of them was ER visits. Did you end up getting more information on that? I have a follow-up.
Sure. Yeah, we have been looking at our, you know, we have some systems and the state and locals have some systems, and we do see an increase above baseline in visits to some emergency rooms for influenza-like illness. That's through our BioSense surveillance system. So we do see some of that. It's difficult to interpret whether that is illness or the so-called worried well. And that's something we're trying to look into a little bit more. You know, with the help of the media, a lot of people know this is going on and are wondering, is that cold or cough something I need to take seriously? So we have seen a few, you know, not every emergency room that we're tracking, but we have seen in a number of sites an increase over the baseline for this year in influenza-like illness visits. No, it's more that, you know, I would say many of our BioSense sites, but not the majority of them, are seeing an increase. But I don't have numbers, but just looking at the math from my gestalt, it's many individual sites.
Follow-up was about the new case count today. Well, what are the two new states, and do you have hospitalization numbers? Also, do you have any more information on how many of the cases had been to Mexico?
The two new states, I'm going to have to refer you to the website. It is on that, or maybe by the end of this we can check on that. The Mexico connection, for cases that we have good information on, which is a moving target, it's about a third of them. The majority of cases, the important point is the majority of cases don't have direct contact with Mexico. They didn't travel to Mexico. It is much more likely that people are getting this particular infection now from somebody who has no, from somebody within their own community. You know, we do think that there's sustained transmission here in the U.S. in several areas. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Can we go to the phone for the next question?
As a reminder on the phone, star 1 to ask a question. Our first question comes from Jeffrey Weiss, the Dallas Morning News. Your line is open.
Yeah, here in North Texas, we've had some fairly different responses from the local health departments. In Dallas County, some events that were planned for today are going on. In Tarrant County and Fort Worth, right just to our west, at the advice of the local health authorities, some events have been closed down. What can you say about what guidance you're giving to the local health officials and how people should interpret what at least appear to be inconsistencies from one location to another?
Yes, thank you. I think the situation these days can be confusing for parents and for readers or viewers to see one thing in one community and another thing nearby. CDC has issued guidance around school dismissals aimed to provide information that could be used by the local authorities, but we do respect the role of local authorities to understand what makes sense. Our guidance suggests that if there's a confirmed or probable case of the novel H1N1 influenza virus that authorities consider dismissing students, and that be for a period up to 14 days, but with regular reevaluations of the circumstances. I think we're all optimistic that in the next several days we'll be able to understand a bit more about this and know whether that particular intervention is appropriate, if it's too much or too little in terms of an intervention. But we do think that other things may make sense, and it's a balance. There are lots of benefits to the students and the community for students being in school. And certainly if you dismiss students and then they go congregate somewhere else, they're really not getting the benefit of school or school lunches, but they're getting all of the risk of being around a lot of other kids. So the importance of the dismissal idea is to try to have very few contacts between children so that we really don't get the virus spreading widely within the school. Local jurisdictions may consider things like how many students have already been sick. Are we seeing the problem at the end of the local outbreak, or is it really the beginning? Is it a time where this intervention might have the most benefit, or is it really too late for it to help? The goal of the social distancing efforts is to try to decrease the ongoing numbers of cases and to shift them to a later time by slowing transmission, with the thought that if we can delay the onset of some of these illnesses, we have more time to prepare a vaccine or for summer and perhaps some relief from the warmer months when influenza is less likely to circulate. So another question from the phone.
Another question from Helen Branswell with the Canadian Press. Your line is open.
Thanks very much. I was wondering, Dr. Shuket, if you know how often are antivirals being used to test the cases in the United States? Are in the early days we heard that most people hadn't needed them and had recovered. Are they now being regularly given, or what's going on?
Thank you for that question. I want to stress that the antiviral medicines that we have in our strategic national stockpile that we've deployed to the state are primarily intended for treatment of influenza, and at this point, mostly the focus is on treating severe symptoms, treating people who are ill with more severe presentations, or people who have higher risk of complications from influenza, pregnant women, young children, people with underlying medical problems. There are some circumstances where preventive use of antiviral medicine may be recommended, very special circumstances that are considered quite high risk or with a high risk patient or person. In terms of the use of antiviral drugs, I can't tell you exactly what's going on. I can tell you that we had one surveillance system that was designed to monitor early warning of whether there was influenza uptake by tracking the prescriptions that are filled for antiviral drugs. And that system is no longer useful because we saw such a big increase in prescriptions, really probably from concern rather than necessarily from use in actual treatment. So I should also stress that oseltamivir, Tamiflu, and Relenza, tenofovir, are both commercially available, and they're also available through the Strategic National Stockpile. And we're told by the manufacturers that they're producing more, and that, you know, that we should be able to have adequate supplies for treatment. As you know, yesterday I think we shared that the Secretary of HHS had moved ahead with the purchase of 13 million courses of antiviral drugs to replenish the stockpile. Another question. What, can I do the room? Yeah, let me do the room next. Okay.
Uh-huh. Pro Harper, WAJA-TV here in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. What is the latest on cases here in Georgia, confirmed cases? And for communities that have possible cases out there, what advice are you giving them right now, even if they are not actually confirmed ones?
Yeah. For the specifics of the Georgia cases, we suggest you contact the Georgia Health Department. They'll have the best information about where things are. As we mentioned a couple days ago, right now the states have the capacity to do that laboratory testing and finalize whether this is or isn't the new H1N1 strain. So they may know before we know what's going on and the circumstance. In communities where a confirmed or probable case has been reported, you know, my key message is the same as in communities where this hasn't been reported. If you have fever and respiratory symptoms, don't go to work or school, don't infect others. If you're feeling fine, make sure that you wash your hands regularly or use alcohol hand gels. That seems really basic, but it's a really effective way to reduce respiratory infection, and everybody has a role to play. The other thing that we think is important for community members is to stay informed, because your own community may have issued recommendations. Some places are changing guidance around schools or community gatherings, for instance, and it's really important to know what's going on where you live. At this point, we don't have national guidance on those community gathering type events, but it's important to stay aware of what's happening in your own community. Let's go back to the phones.
Next question comes from Olivia Hampton with AFP. Your line is open.
Hi. I just wanted you to confirm for the new cases, does that include the toddler who died?
We had previously mentioned a toddler who died, unfortunately, from Texas. And yes, I believe that's part of the total of 160 that we're describing.
Okay.
I'm not aware of any additional deaths that are laboratory confirmed to be due to this virus. We continue to look for them, and I will not be surprised if we find additional severe cases or additional deaths. Remember that seasonal influenza causes about 36,000 deaths every year, 200,000 hospitalizations, millions and millions of infections. So even if this virus behaves quite similarly to seasonal influenza, we would expect a range of mild to severe and even fatal cases. Next question back there at the camera.
Hi, Leslie Painter with CBS Atlanta. You started off your comments talking about some of the public thoughts that maybe we're out of the woods. Can you talk a little bit about why that concerns you and where the happy medium is between panic and, you know, being very blasé about the whole thing?
Yeah. You know, I think it's really challenging to find that right balance, to stay alert and attentive and take those important steps personally or in your own community. What I want to say is that we have a new influenza virus. It's spreading. We don't know as much as we'd like to about the way it's going to behave in our communities, and we're learning a little bit more each day about the way it behaved in Mexico, but the picture is still very incomplete. Here in the U.S., we're trying to act aggressively and quickly so that if it does turn out to be a moderate or severe influenza strain, that we're prepared, that we have the resources to treat people, that we can reduce the spread. So I think I don't want people to feel like they don't have to be aware of this, because it may be that the common illness is going to come to your community soon. Also, severe symptoms of illness are such that you should seek medical care and make sure that you do get treated. We don't want people to be, it's very difficult tracking the media or tracking different messages to understand what level of concern to have, and I just hope we can give you the facts as we find them out. Next question from the phone.
Next question, Joanne Slaberner with NPR. Your line is open.
Yeah, hi, thanks. It seems like the local reactions are primarily to close schools but leave other institutions alone. But epidemiologically, have schools been shown to be, you know, deemed nexus of contagion?
You know, there's been a lot of modeling done in the past several years. We've actually been investing quite a lot of resources in understanding and preparing for pandemic influenza. And one of the findings was that we know some things from seasonal influenza and some things from studying pandemics of the past century. Children are very common reservoirs for infectious diseases, including infectious viruses like influenza. They tend to have lots of social contact, more than adults, somebody's laughing here because we know what kids are like, and they also shed the virus longer than adults do. So those circumstances, the frequent social contact, the close proximity in, you know, in schools, and then the longer period of shedding, often without even having symptoms, are such that transmission can move quickly through a school, and it may take a longer time to go through a different kind of institution or workplace or community. So some of the modeling about what we call community mitigation, or that attempt to really slow spread within a community, suggested that schools would be a valuable intervention point. This may not be the case for every influenza virus or every pandemic, potential influenza virus, but the modeling efforts suggested that this was a promising area when we thought about social distancing. There are other parts of the armamentarium, you know, closing mass gatherings, teleworking, this type of thing, but it was one of the interventions that, although potentially very disruptive, could have a payoff. We're, in fact, working with infectious disease modelers on this response effort. We've brought some of the best infectious disease modelers to bear on this question, people who've really been looking at influenza transmission and trying to apply it to the current circumstance. And we're, you know, trying to use our real-time data and their models to understand where our interventions will be the most useful. The next question from the phone.
Next question, Elizabeth Allen with San Antonio Express News. Your line is open.
Good morning. I had a clarification question. We've had reports that a special, I know that CDC officials are already in Texas, but we had a report that a specialized team was sent to California and that San Antonio officials have requested one to be sent here. I was wondering about that, and also if that group is deployed, if that would have any effect on the bottleneck on testing.
Okay, I didn't hear all of that, but this is about teams being deployed to the field for the laboratory or just general teams being deployed?
I think for the laboratory.
Right, okay. I can say that we've been working to make sure that we can reduce the bottlenecks on laboratory testing. You know, one thing we did early on was send laboratory experts to Mexico to help there so that they were able to establish the ability to test for this virus on site in Mexico. I think we'll need to get back to you whether we actually have laboratory staff in the field in San Antonio or California. I'm not remembering whether that's happened, but I think someone has told me about that possibility. The big thing we've done is to ship out these new kits for this new virus to the public health laboratories so that they can do the testing beyond the probable stage to the confirmed stage. And that, we hope, will reduce some of the bottlenecks here in Atlanta. We're also trying to analyze the bottlenecks and understand where the issues are. I think we're in communication with the Association of Public Health Laboratories, who are really, you know, terrific at networking and understanding the situation. And I hope we'll be able to address these bottlenecks. You know, to me, however good our response is, we can do better. And I really want to make sure that we hear what the problems are and that we fix them if we can. Another question from the phone?
Another question, Fred Kasker with Miami Herald. Your line is open.
Thank you. Could you, again, on the school closings, could you elaborate on how, are you saying that the virus lasts longer in children, and that's one reason that you recommend that they close for up to 14 days?
The shedding of the virus is one way that it spreads. Certainly when you're actively infecting and coughing and sneezing, that's pretty much how you're going to spread the virus, but you can still have virus in your body without having any symptoms. And children are, it turns out virologic studies suggest that children can shed the virus longer, probably because of their immune status, for instance. But we don't know for sure for this new virus if that's the case. The change from 7 to 10 days to 14 days was to recognize that if we really were trying to wait for children to recongregate till after transmission was likely to have ended, we should go on the longer side. But I do want to say these are interim guidance on the school dismissal. Some of the modeling that had been done in development of our community mitigation strategies included many different durations for school dismissals depending on the severity of a pandemic. If you have a really severe pandemic like a Category 5 or like the 1918 pandemic, schools could be dismissed for months. So the 14-day period. The idea there was to use what we knew about the science of influenza virus and make some prudent recommendations. But I do want to say those are being reevaluated. Okay, another phone question?
Next one's from Betsy McKay with Wall Street Journal. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you, Dr. Shuckett. I wanted to follow up on something that I think you mentioned yesterday about testing samples, which, if I understood it correctly, was about the fact that eventually, you know, as the number of cases mounts, or maybe already, that not every sample would be tested and confirmed as this new strain of H1N1. And so if I understood correctly, I wondered if you could talk about, you know, why it's not possible to do that. And for an individual, how important is it to know if the illness that they have or had is this particular strain? I mean, if they, you know, want to know they have the antibodies and maybe are immune to it going forward, is there any way for them to find out? I also wanted to ask, I know Mike asked about hospitalizations, and I may have missed the answer, if you know the number of hospitalizations that there have been thus far. Thanks.
I believe that the number of hospitalizations now is 13, but is that right? Okay, 13, but I think it's, we have to double check if that's confirmed and probable, or that's just confirmed. That's confirmed only? Okay. Yeah, okay, we can double check on that, because I thought it was a bit fewer than that. But, you know, we are seeing hospitalizations. We haven't talked that much about them, but we are seeing them. And, you know, it's important to remember that with seasonal flu, we have 200,000 hospitalizations each year, generally in people who are very young or very old or who have medical complications, other clinical illnesses. The value of knowing whether the respiratory infection that each individual has is caused by this new virus is different in different periods. At the beginning of our detection of this concern, it was important to know when the strain had arrived in the community. When did we see, and certainly that's the case internationally, countries that haven't yet detected it really need to know, do we have anybody with this? But testing priorities change over time. The good thing right now is that the treatment recommendations for this particular influenza virus are actually a little easier than for seasonal flu. The virus that we've got is sensitive to the oseltamivir and zanamivir, Tamiflu, and Rilenza. And so for severe patients, patients who are presenting with severe illness or people who are presenting with respiratory symptoms who have underlying risk factors, the treatment of this infection could be done without knowing specifically which influenza strain they have, just knowing that a severe influenza-like illness. So I think for an individual, it's really of less relevance for treatment, for instance, than it would have been at the beginning when there was not yet confirmed disease in a particular case. We are pulling together our clinical experts and our influenza experts in thinking through the diagnostic testing recommendations in different circumstances. When we had done our pandemic planning, we always intended to change the way the diagnostic tests are used at different periods, intensive testing at the beginning and a little bit less intensive sampling later on, trying to understand changes. We're using one of our ongoing surveillance systems, the influenza-like illness sentinel providers, as a way to really understand what's going over time. There are physicians around the country that actively collect specimens for virus testing from people with influenza-like illness and report conditions to us. So we're using that network to understand, are the illnesses going up or down, and is the proportion of those illnesses that are caused by this virus changing. So that's a system that we'll probably in the next week or so want to tell you a little bit more about. Okay, so two more from the phone.
Next one's Andrew Quinn with Reuters. Your line is open.
Hi. I'd like to return to the Mexico situation. Their health minister said today he believes their outbreak is stabilized. And I was wondering if, looking at their numbers, if you'd agree with that. And if so, what might that suggest about the course of infection in this country?
You know, I am encouraged by what I have heard about the reports from Mexico, but I want to say that we are remaining vigilant, and we have seen times where things appear to be getting better, and then get worse again. You may remember in 2003 in Canada, as they were dealing with the SARS outbreak, they thought it was really all clear and then found that they had a big second wave in terms of nursing homes that had cases and continued to spread. So I think in Mexico, we may be holding our breath for some time, but remaining vigilant is important. And I think the situation of SARS in Canada is, we should be mindful of it. It reminds us how important infection control is in the hospital settings around the world, and remaining attentive to changes. In particular, with a new virus like this, we don't know exactly how it's going to behave over time or as the season changes. Okay, so last question here in the room? Okay, yes.
Sorry, Cece Connolly. I wanted to follow up on Bessie's question a little bit because I think maybe what she was asking, there's this notion that right now we don't have any underlying immunity to this new strain of virus. Mm-hmm. And so is it perhaps worthwhile to know if you've been exposed, because perhaps that would mean in the future you might have a little bit of built-up immunity.
Right. You know, that is an important concept, and we've been talking about that as well, the idea of whether a certain percentage of the population is infected with this virus this year, will that mean they won't be at risk for it next fall? There are many different ways to get at that type of question, including population surveys of serologic surveys. I can say that one of our priorities is to try to develop a serologic assay to understand whether somebody's been exposed to this virus and infected and made antibodies. I'm told by our influenza experts that it might be pretty difficult to do that. So it's on our list of things we're working on, but we can't promise that we'll have a tool that will help us predict the situation. But yes, I do think that it can be valuable, especially when we're going forward and thinking about vaccination, who might need it, and you know who's already been exposed, to understand exactly how much illness we've gone through in the country. So, okay.
I want to thank everybody for coming out. We will do a briefing tomorrow as part of our daily briefing cycle. It is 13 hospitalizations among confirmed cases.
This concludes today's conference. We thank you for your participation. At this time, you may disconnect your lines.